So this morning, we're continuing our series called Going Public. This is the second week of the series, and the idea is that we're trying to learn how to go from being very private in our faith to being more public. So if there's a continuum over here from being very private about our faith and really we don't talk about our faith with anybody to being more public over here where we're talking about our faith regularly with people, it's a regular topic of conversation with a lot of people in our lives, including those who don't yet know Jesus, but we're very public about our faith. We're trying to move from being more private to more public, taking a step of faith and a step of growth to moving to a more public place with our faith, because we're told, once again, we talked about this last week, that we should keep that to ourselves. It's fine for you to have faith, but that's a private thing. You just kind of keep that between you and yourself, and don't talk about that, and that's something that you do at home, but you don't, it doesn't need to affect anyone else's life. That's kind of the cultural understanding of what where faith fits into society and conversation and things like that. But we know that kind of built into our faith is this mandate, this command really by Jesus to go and tell, go make disciples. Other people should know. We should not keep this to ourselves. Jesus calls his followers the light of the world and tells them that they can't hide the light underneath the basket, or underneath a bushel, right? It needs to be placed on a high place for all to see so that that light can actually benefit the people who need the light. So today we're going to be in John chapter 9, and we are looking each week at a story in the Bible. The first 2 weeks of the series have been in the Gospel of John. The next 3 weeks are going to be in the book of Acts. So next week we'll start in the book of Acts and look at three different stories in the book of Acts about people going public with their faith. They're going public in some way about Jesus, about their faith in Jesus. They're telling their story. They're talking about what Jesus has done for them. And so today we look at a story in John chapter 9 about Jesus healing a blind man, someone who was blind from birth. And I love this story, and if it's a familiar story, but I think there's a lot of principles in there for us about what happens here and the way this man goes public about what Jesus has done for him. Before we dive into that, I want to say that we need to acknowledge that the reason that maybe we aren't more public with our faith is that there is a risk involved. So if you're over here, you're limiting the risk as much as possible. If you don't ever talk about your faith, you don't ever deal with the potential of being rejected for being a person of faith. If you're over here and you say, I just kind of keep it to myself and I have my personal convictions, but I don't ever talk about it, you're not risking being vulnerable, right? There's even just the vulnerability thing. Brené Brown is a speaker who's a very popular TED Talk. If you've seen some of the TED Talks, Brené Brown's got one of the most viewed TED Talks, and she's a researcher on her and her topic that she researches is shame. She's a shame researcher. And she studies vulnerability and shame. And I heard her speak at a conference that I was at. And she was talking about something that she called, she was trying to describe this kind of feeling of when you are vulnerable with somebody. When you really just kind of open your heart up with somebody in your life. And you share with them something that's personal. Something that you feel like gets right to your identity or right to kind of your fears maybe. But you risk and you are vulnerable with somebody because you care about this person, you want to be honest with them, and vulnerability really is a great way to build relationship with people. That's where community kind of develops. And then she talked about the feeling you feel after that. So it's you're vulnerable and you're real with somebody, and then later you go, oh man, I wonder what they're thinking about what I shared with them. And you have that sense of like, I hope that they don't think something weird about me now. I hope they still like me. I was very honest with them and shared, and it seemed like it was fine during the conversation, but now here I am like 20 minutes later or an hour later or the next day, and I'm feeling really insecure about how vulnerable I was in that conversation. I'm not going to ask you to say, have you ever felt that before? Because I think we all can identify with that to some degree. And I've had times where I'll say something to somebody and I'll go back and send them a text message later, like, I hope you didn't think that I meant, you know. You know what I'm talking about. And her term, I love this term she used. She said, that's called a vulnerability hangover. Where you're vulnerable with somebody and you go, oh, and you have that feeling after, and you're like, oh, so that's the vulnerability hangover. So now you have a term for that feeling that you've probably felt before. But to be vulnerable with somebody, to share your faith with someone, to talk about what you believe, and why you believe it and the difference that what you believe has made in your life is a vulnerable thing to do. You are being vulnerable in that moment. And with any act of vulnerability, there's risk involved. And we have to determine, is the risk worth it? Right? Because we do lots of things that involve risk. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But there's risk with just going outside your house every day. Staying in your house has risky elements. I mean, there's risk every day, that small, everyday kind of risks that we take without even thinking about them, because we know that the risk is worth it, because what we'll accomplish is worth the risk. But we're going to talk about this idea of going public. We're going to look at three points of application as we tell this story. I love this story in John chapter 9, and we're going to dive in here. The ministry of Jesus in Jerusalem, kind of early days of Jesus' ministry, John chapter 9. We're going to pick it up in verse 1. And he passed by, Jesus passed by. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. This is an incredible miracle. This is one of these, I mean, just to be there and really put ourselves in the story, I encourage you often to use your imagination when you're reading these scriptures and try to picture what it is like. What would it have been like to be someone blind from birth? What would it be like to have never seen the people in their life, never seen your mother's face or your father's face, to just only recognize people by voice and never have this ability to see? And the disciples, you got to be patient with the disciples when you read about them in the Gospels, right? They're pretty insensitive. In this conversation, they see a man blind from birth. And it turns out that when in someone in this situation, in this culture, their way of living would just be begging, just relying on the kindness of strangers. And they have this conversation, and maybe close enough for this man to hear, probably close enough for him to hear, the disciples say, "Hey, Jesus, can you tell us about this man's situation? Was he a sinner in the womb or something, and that's why he was born blind? Or maybe his parents sinned, and his blindness is a judgment on him?" The disciples are taking a very simplistic view of pain. And when bad things happen, they're taking an overly simplistic view of situations like this. Like, if he is going through something that he would not want to be going through, he must have done something to deserve it, or maybe people close to him did something to deserve it. And the fact that he is blind is God's judgment on him. That was the disciples' kind of understanding, very, very common understanding in this culture. And I think you'll find in a lot of ways common in our culture, where people think if something bad is happening to someone, they must deserve it in some way. It's kind of this karma kind of idea. And we apply that. People who do feel that way don't apply it across the board, right? They don't talk about, a disaster that happened in Indonesia and the tsunami, they must have all deserved that, right? That's not the way people apply that. But there's this very common perception of, if something bad's happened to somebody, they must have done something to deserve it. And that's Job's friends in the Old Testament. It's kind of their perspective. Like, "Job, bad things are happening to you. You must have done something to deserve this." And Jesus tells him that, no. Like, you're way off base here. He said, this happened in this man's life for this moment right now. It's so the works of God might be displayed in him. He's given an answer to why his life up to this point has been very difficult. Now you know it's for this moment, because you were going to meet Jesus at some point. Jesus miraculously heals him and forms mud, puts it on his eyes, anoints his eyes, it said, and it says, "Go wash your eyes." So this man who already couldn't see is now walking towards this body of water, this pool of Siloam, and he's going to wash this mud off of his eyes. And the Bible tells us that as he washes the mud off of his eyes, something incredible happens. He realizes that he can see. Now let's continue the story in verse 8. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." And he kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." So as often happens in the Bible, God's work creates a scene. There's onlookers, there's people gathered around like, "Is that the guy that used to sit out here? We know him, right? We know there was a guy that was blind that was always here and always begging, and this guy looks a lot like him, but he moves around like he can see now, and it seems like he can see. This must be someone who just looks like him, and maybe the other guy's gone." And I love it. He says, "I am the man," right? He's not saying like, "I'm the man," like that, but he goes, no, just let me clear this up for you. It's me. I am that guy. They said, "Well, then how did that happen?" And he gives them his story. He very just recites the facts that we just read about in the first seven verses of John 9. This is how it happened. He made mud. The man named Jesus, some of you have heard about him. The man named Jesus made some mud, anointed my eyes. I washed in the pool. Now I can see. And there's a lot that he doesn't understand. We'll read more about that in just a few moments. But he knows some things. He doesn't. Where is he now? I don't know. I just know that what happened to me. I'll tell you what happened to me. That's what I know. That's what I can tell you about with clarity, is this is what happened to me. And you're going to start to see this guy's personality come through. And I love that. I don't think there's very many stories in the Bible that captures this nameless individual's personality as much as this story does. I think he's got a little bit of an attitude, and you'll see that in the next few verses. I think he seems like a fun guy to have a conversation with, and maybe a little sarcastic. Is there sarcasm in the Bible? I think there might be. We'll see in these next few verses. Let's keep reading. Verse 13 to 17. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." So up until this point in the story, it's been all good news. This is an incredible story. There's a healing that's taken place. And now, like, when you're out on a sunny day, and all of a sudden the light changes around you, and you go, "Oh, what happened?" And you look up, and there's a cloud that's gone across the sun. This is what happens in our story. The Debbie Downers of the Bible have walked into the situation, and they have some things to say about this miracle. The Pharisees are unhappy for a couple of reasons, right? Jesus did something kind for somebody on the Sabbath. He healed this man on the Sabbath, and he specifically did it by making mud with spit and dirt, which would have been a violation of the rules that they had put up around the Sabbath. They said, we need to get very strict about defining what work is. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, if you were here for our series where we were talking about the Sabbath, how this had become a burdensome thing. Jesus was following the law, but he was not following their man-made laws about what constituted work and what didn't. And so here he's done something with basically nothing. He spit in the dirt, he made mud, he put it on someone's eyes. He had broken two laws. You're not supposed to heal anybody on the Sabbath. If you're a doctor, you were supposed to not carry out your physician work, your medical work on the Sabbath day. And so bringing sight to somebody was technically a violation. So they miss the forest for the trees, right? They're totally like distracted by, oh, well, okay, a man who could never see in his life, he was born without the ability to see, can now see. Can we talk about that for a moment? They're distracted by the fact that this happened on the wrong day. And the man has this growing recognition of who Jesus is. He says, well, he's a prophet. He's a prophet. That's who. What do you say about him since he's opened your eyes? Now let's continue reading in verse 18 to 23. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself. Note this, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. The reputation of these Pharisee leaders was a fearful one. They were afraid. They didn't even want to be, they went from celebrating to like, uh-oh, we're in trouble now. Just go ask him. He's old enough. He can tell you. And they were fearful. And so there's this controversy. What do you say about Jesus? Is Jesus a sinner? Or is he something more? Is he great? Is he a prophet? Let's pick it up in verse 24. And now you'll see his personality really come out in this conversation with the blind man. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Burn. 28, and they reviled him. It didn't go over well, saying, you are his disciples, but we are disciples. You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. Put in his place, surely the blind man knows where his place is, and he will back down, right? Surely he's not going to respond with even more sarcasm or attitude to that conversation. Surely this is the end, right? He knows. No, verse 30, the man answered, why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and would you teach us? And they cast him out. The casting out is not a small thing. He was cast out of the fellowship. He was cast out of the synagogue. This was a big deal. This was his social circle. This was really his world, the being able to worship with his fellow Jews, and now he's being cast out of the community. That's a big deal. He's been excommunicated. He has been kicked out. But we see this growing understanding of who Jesus is. He's getting this. He knows there's something about Jesus. What they're saying is, this isn't the truth, and he's trying to get at the truth, and he's trying to communicate to them, and I think maybe with a little bit of, you know, he's got some, I don't know, just I love his perspective and the way he thinks and talks. Verse 35, let's pick up the story here. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered, and who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? Jesus said to him, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. He said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. Now, there's 3 points from this story that I want to get at for us today, and there's 3 points about going public with our faith, because this man went public about his faith, and it cost him. He was kicked out of his community, but then he was invited into a new community by Jesus. He was invited to be one of Jesus' followers, and we see him making this statement of faith that, Lord, I believe, and then it tells us that he's worshiping God. He's worshiping the Son of God. He's worshiping Jesus, God the Son. But here's the situation. Going public, here's the first point. Going public involves recognizing that we are witnesses. Going public involves recognizing that we are witnesses. When I was growing up in church, and that I would hear this terminology that would use the word witness not as a noun, as something that you are, a person, place, thing, or idea, right? We learned about nouns in elementary school, but as a verb. So someone was going to go witness to someone. I'm going to go witness to somebody. And I remember hearing that term, and it was something I just accepted, like that's, you go witness to somebody. And that's a really courageous thing, to go and plan to go and share your faith with somebody. But to use that terminology, I'm going to go and witness, it makes sense in the context of church, perhaps, but in a court situation or outside the church, it's kind of a confusing way of explaining that. When Jesus is talking to his disciples in Acts chapter 1, he says, you will be my witnesses. You're going to go and be my witnesses. where in all of these different places, you will be a witness. And so a witness is not, is more something you are than something you do. And to be a witness means that you have a story, you have something that, that Jesus has done for you. So the man in this story had a very simple testimony, a very simple witness. I once was blind, but now I see. And his story, if to anyone that wanted to hear, he said it to the onlookers, he said it to the Pharisees a couple of times. What's your story? What, tell me about Jesus. He said, there's a lot I do not know, but I'll tell you this, I used to be blind and I'm not anymore. I see now. And that's an incredible testimony. So simply him being a witness, being someone who can share a story of what Jesus did for them. Going public involves recognizing that you are a witness. It is an identity issue. If you were a follower of Jesus this morning, you are a witness. Whether or not you share that witness with other people, you have witnessed Christ's work in you in some way, Christ's provision for you, Christ working in your life, Christ giving you new life, Christ, you know, providing for you or doing, making some difference in your life, that there's, your life is different than it would have been without Jesus involved in your life. And so because of that, you are a witness. It is part of your identity. The second point is that you don't have to wait until you have all the answers before you go public. First point, going public involves recognizing that we are witnesses. Second point, you don't have to wait until you have all of the answers before you go public. I love that this man is very honest about what he knows and what he doesn't know. There's a lot of questions that he doesn't know how to answer. Where is Jesus? I don't know. Who is Jesus? I think he's a prophet. I'm not sure. There's all these things. He's growing in his understanding about who Jesus is until Jesus eventually brings him in and says, do you believe in the Son of Man? I don't know who he is. Tell me who he is. It's me. It's the one that's been talking to you. And he responds with this very simple statement of faith. Lord, I believe. And then it says he worships him. But he has this growing understanding. 2 Peter 3:18 talks about having a growing awareness of Jesus, growing in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus. And that's the pattern for the Christian life, is that we would begin the life with Christ, and then grow in the grace and our knowledge of Jesus. It's this progression. But we don't start with a place, before we can ever go public with our faith, we don't have to have all the answers. There will be things that you do not know how to answer. And this man, he says, I don't know. I do not know. It's okay to say that. It's okay if you're talking about your faith with somebody who doesn't yet share your faith to say, I don't know. That's not a failure, right? You didn't follow Jesus because you had every single question there is to have answered, right? It's okay to admit that you don't know. And I hope there will be questions you used to have that you don't struggle with anymore because you're growing in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus, as 2 Peter 3:18 says. You don't have to wait till you have all the answers before you go public with people. I remember talking about my faith at a time in my life where I wasn't following Jesus well, but I kind of had this Christian understanding and Christian mindset, and so I was talking with people that I served with in the Navy about faith, and they had so many questions that I did not know how to answer. And for me, it was a difficult season because I wanted to be able to answer all those questions, but I really wasn't following Jesus. I wasn't serving him the way I should have been. And I needed, so these questions were something that I did not know how to answer. Like, how could you say you Christians believe this? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know how to answer those questions. And now I love having those conversations because I spent many years studying how to answer difficult questions. And I love to have, if you have difficult questions, let's talk after church. I'd love to have those conversations. But this was something that I had to grow in my understanding of. To have questions does not mean you have to remain silent. You don't have to wait till you have all the answers before you go public with your faith. The final point is this: going public includes risk. Going public includes risk. There may be people who look down on you for believing what you believe, and that's a risk that we have to be willing to accept. You may have one of those vulnerability hangovers like we talked about at the beginning for talking about your faith with somebody. You open your heart up to somebody and you say, hey, this is something that has made a big difference in my life. And I just, Like my faith has helped me, and I just wanted to share that with you. Like I know that when I'm facing a difficult time, I can pray, and I know that God hears me. And then so many times I've felt peace come into my heart when I've been struggling with something, and I've come to God in prayer, and I don't know what you believe, but that's something that's been something that's really important to me. Tell me about what you believe. Tell me about your relationship with God, or what you think about that. And that's vulnerable, and it's risky. But it's a risk that's absolutely worth taking. Because think about the alternative to that, right? And the alternative is that the people in your life that you are most closely positioned to tell them in a way that they can hear about who Jesus is, the risk is them never hearing if you don't want to go public. And I think there's something really to what I just said, and so I'm going to say it again, and hope you catch it this time. There are people that you are positioned to speak with. God put you in people's lives, and they can probably hear from you about who Jesus is better than anybody else in the world. They would just flip right past the channels on TV that talk about, that have the preachers on them. They're not going to listen to that. They're not going to listen to the street preacher, probably. They're not going to show up to church, probably. But you're in their life, and God put you there on purpose. God put you there to be that person who could extend an invitation to church, or who could just have a spiritual conversation with somebody, or who could offer to pray for somebody in your life, or who could just even tell them, I go to church, you're welcome to come join me sometime, I'd love to do that, or read a book with somebody, read the Gospel of John with somebody. God put you there, and it wasn't an accident. And so the risk of being vulnerable is far outweighed by the risk of not ever sharing your faith with somebody who needs to hear it. And this was really brought home for me this week with the news that Pam shared about earlier, about the camper that was tragically this situation downtown with the shooting. And I mean, the thing that I was struggling Wednesday night with that news and just burdened by that, but I kept thinking about eternity. I'm like, eternity matters. Eternity is real, and I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to share the gospel with this young man. That he had a chance to hear faith and to see it lived out in the lives of people, and he made a decision to follow Jesus. Like he professed his faith in him and was baptized in front of our church in the baptism 4 years ago at down in the Spokane River. And to me, that is such a blessing that we can point to that moment in that young man's life where he had this opportunity to hear the gospel and to see faith lived out. And it's risky to do that, but the risk is far outweighed by the benefit of doing that. There's a couple of videos on YouTube. There's some genres of viral videos that make an emotional impact on me most times when I watch them. There's the guys coming home from war, the guys in the service members, men and women coming home from war and surprising their family members. Like that's a genre of video that just messes with me every time I watch those. Having been in the military myself and grew up in a military family, it's like it just those videos wreck me when I see them. There's other videos on YouTube or that I'll see sometimes that just have an emotional impact on me. Have you seen the ones where people gain their hearing for the first time? They get the cochlear implant and they can hear the voice of somebody. It's powerful. There's another series of videos where people who are colorblind get these special glasses that enable them to see color for the first time. Have you seen these videos? You're going to see one right now. I want to show you in just a moment this video of a boy, 10-year-old boy, never been able to see the colors that colorblind people can't see. I don't know what kind of colorblind he is, but he receives this pair of glasses, and usually what people do is they have balloons, they have these different things, and we'll see, I want you to see his reaction, so let's take a look at this video.
What are these things?
Those are just extra balloons.
Balloons?
It's in the box, honey.
Here, open in here.
Zach, thanks for having
a
camera. I don't have
them.
There you
we
go.
Got them. Alright, dude.
Alright.
I hope you work.
Xavier. He's going up a little bit for us, buddy. Come on.
Here goes nothing.
here, buddy. Can you see it?
See my shirt? Purple? See Grant's shirt? Yellow? It's a lot of green out here, huh? So you say the golf course is so green?
Do you think you're ever going to take him off that?
I don't want to.
You don't want to?
Don't have to.
You see here?
Look at him. Right.
Oh, we're at home, so check out the SBA signal.
His baseball equipment. He never knows what color things are.
You see the seams.
You see the different colors here? The green and the orange for the old canes?
Yeah.
Flag look different? Yeah.
The red, white, and
blue. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Enjoy.
Thank you. How much?
Right, have fun, buddy.
So there's a bunch of these videos like this online, and it's powerful. There's something emotional about that, about not being able to use a sense for a while and all of a sudden having the ability to use this, you know, sense. And I was thinking about this, you know, to see someone, just not able to see all the colors, all the different color spectrums, and now to be able to have this new ability to see is emotional. And there's a ton of these videos, and almost always they cry. Almost always. People are tearing up, and the people around them cry, and it's this powerful experience. Think about the man in the story that we read. How about having no sight? And then being given the ability miraculously to see. And think about even what had to happen in your brain, just the neurons and the things, the connections that were never made because he never had sight, that Jesus had to miraculously restore sight and all the connections between his eyes and everything. There was so much this creative miracle that God did here, but there's a greater miracle in this story. There's another kind of blindness that's healed in this story. This man was blind to who Jesus was, and he understood and received who Jesus was. And so he was twice blind, really, because he was blind to all the physical world, but he was also blind to the spiritual reality of who Jesus was. And then his blindness was healed. He was given sight. And I want to tell you this morning that if you're a follower of Jesus, that is your story also. You can say with this man in the story that I once was blind, but now I see. One thing I know, I used to be blind, but now I see. The testimony of everybody who has a life with Jesus is going from spiritual blindness to now having the light of the world in your life. There's a bigger miracle. The spiritual blindness is healed. He understands. He makes this simple statement, Lord, I believe. And then scripture tells us he worshiped him. And we're going to end our time together this morning with that. Can you put John 9:38 up on the screen there? We're going to celebrate communion in a few moments, and we're going to worship together. And I want to tell you how, kind of just what to expect. There's the communion elements here on the table. One of the ushers will be working their way through the room if you're unable to make it up here to get the elements from the table. But there's two cups stacked together, the bread's in the bottom one, the juice is in the top. The worship team's going to lead us in a time of worship. And I want to encourage you to do something. So you see those words on the screen, Lord, I believe, and it says he worshiped him. When we celebrate communion, it is a proclamation of belief. We are proclaiming belief in Jesus. That's what the Apostle Paul described it. We're proclaiming the Lord's death until he comes. And so when we celebrate communion, it's an opportunity to proclaim through participating. We're participating by, you know, eating the bread and drinking from the cup, and that participation is a statement of faith. It is a Lord, I believe kind of moment. And I want to ask you to do something today. We're going to come up during the communion time at some point during this next song, take the elements back to your seat, and then just on your own during the song, I want you to say loud enough for you to hear yourself before you eat the bread and drink from the cup, I want you to say, Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe. The statement, the simple three words that the blind man uttered, I once was blind, but now I see. I want you to make that statement of faith. Lord, I believe. And then you can eat and then drink from the cup, okay? That's my challenge to you, my encouragement for you to do that this morning. Just remember what Jesus has done for us, and then may we be public in letting other people know what we believe as well, and helping other people find Jesus, and helping other people take steps towards Christ. I'm gonna pray for us, and then we'll end our time together that way. Lord, we thank you for your word. We thank you for this time of worship and this time of learning from this great testimony of the man born blind and how he was given sight. And Lord, may we be tuned into that reality that that's our story as well. That if we have been given spiritual sight, if we have put our faith in you, and Lord, if we haven't, that's open to everybody here today, that we might receive a relationship with you and begin to follow you. I pray for any in this room who have yet to do that, that they would do it today. But Lord, your word tells us that you are the light of the world, that we don't need to walk in darkness. And a life without you is a life in darkness. And so if we are following you, we have been given sight. We have been given the ability to see through our spiritual eyes and to see this world in a whole new way. We've been given sight. We were once blind, but now we see. And Lord, may that testimony, may that witness help us to be bold in spite of the risks. May we be bold. May we know that we don't have to have all the answers, but we have a story to tell. And Lord, may we be faithful to begin telling that story to the people around us that you have put us in close proximity to, that need to hear our story, that need to know Jesus, that to know your son that we know and we're so grateful for. Lord, please bless this time of communion, this time of celebrating the Lord's Supper. I pray that this would be, as we make that simple statement of faith out loud, Lord, I believe. I pray that this would be a time of building up our faith. As we say those words out loud, it would be a thing that actually strengthens our faith, where we believe you even more and we trust you even more. So Lord, help us to be even courageous and vulnerable around each other this morning to say that out loud, to say those words, Lord, I believe, and celebrate and worship together this morning. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.